I think Gahari stays in Montreal. I think he's done a great job in Montreal. I think they don't let him go, and I think he's still...
Who's they, though? They don't have an owner.
Well, it's me and you. We're doing the league's podcast. We're partial. We're partial
owners. Bosses.
Hey, Gahari, tighten up, or I'll fire you.
You are now listening to The Waggle, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
That's right. It is the Waggle Podcast. I'm Donovan Bennett. I'm with David Sanchez, and it is brought to you by Sport Clips. That's right, fans. This podcast each and every week is brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips, known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience, massaging shampoos, hot steam towels, sports on TV like hockey, baseball, basketball, and of course, football. Oh, and that's right, the legendary haircuts. You can now book your appointment online at sportclips.ca. That is sportclips.ca. Do it right now. Get a haircut today. I'm Donovan Bennett. Today, as I said, I'm with David Sanchez. And actually, David, last week we were recording as some news was breaking. The Argos had an announcement that they were changing their front office, and wasn't certainly clear exactly what that change was going to be. Now we know. Michael Clemens.
Right.
Yes. All right. Yeah.
By the way, DJ does an absolutely amazing pinball.
Should I do the rest of the podcast in my pinball voice?
Yeah. Named the 20th GM in Argos history. That's right. I mean, we've fallen on some hard times. 2-12 this year. Oh, I'm now 3-12. I'm sorry, mistaken. But are missing the playoffs. Last year, 4-14. Missed the playoffs. Since we won the Grey Cup, we have won 6 games. We've had some challenges. But in 2017, we're 9-9. We won the Grey Cup. And for that, we thank Jim Pop. Thank him for his service. But the year before that, 5-13, missed the playoffs. So there is a systemic issue, and I feel we have let our fans down.
I think that's what pinball would say. Seriously,
yes.
And we both love the man dearly. What does this mean? He's been a head coach. He's been a coach and a player, partially at the same time. He's been a president for the interim in between. He's been an ambassador. The organization has had a break glass and call pinball mentality for the last decade and a half. And that here we are. But can he alone, doing a job that he's never done, rectify and turn around the good ship Argonaut?
His job as the GM will be not a figurehead, DJ, but the leader of the organization, somebody to solidify and bring that foundation from the football side of things to Toronto. And that's why pinball's there. Now, I said that you need to, in a locker room, one of the things that every team needs is belief from their players, belief from the assistant coaches, and belief from the fans that the ship is headed in the right direction. And regardless of his experience as a GM, when you have pinball there, you don't have to build and earn that trust and belief. It's instantly there. That's how I feel about pinball and him joining the Argos. Am I concerned that he doesn't have experience as a general manager? I'm not, unless he takes a heavy role in building the team. And I think John Murphy is going to be the one that controls that and handles that, with, of course, pinball having final say.
Let's be honest. John Murphy is the general manager of the team. Like, in terms of the traditional roles that general managers play, getting on the phone, talking to agents, talking to personnel people in the United States, talking to college coaches. Pinball's not going to be at the East-West Bowl doing hand times of wide receivers. He's not.
Here's where I disagree.
Okay.
John Murphy will be the director of player personnel. John Murphy will be the head scout. John Murphy will be that. Pinball is the GM. And the GM role, DJ, is the guy that makes the final decision. Is the guy that decides we're going to sign Jeremiah Masoli next year to be our quarterback. We're going to get rid of James Franklin. That's the GM. Now, to your point, yes, John Murphy's going to be at the East-West game. John Murphy's going to be scouting the players in the CFL. Pinball has no clue about – I guarantee you he can't name five guys on most teams. I promise you. That's not the point.
In the CFL?
I bet he can't. I bet he can't name 10. And that's not a knock on Pinball. Yeah, yeah. That's just the fact that he's a busy dude, and he's not paying attention to the league all that much. But John Murphy will be the director of player personnel. But when Pinball says, I make the final decision, when it comes down to those big decisions, it will be Michael Pinball Clemens that will decide.
I agree.
Head coach.
I agree.
That's what they got one coming up right now, head coach.
Well, I agree. And
you think John Murphy's deciding that?
No. Listen, everyone has a different org chart. Titles are just for people to put on their business cards. What you do in an organization is based on skill set and what the group needs. And so if he's the GM, title or not, the roles are going to change. In many organizations, the person that you described is not called the GM. It's called the president.
Yeah, agree.
The president decides if we're going to spend money on X. The president decides who's going to be the coach. The difference here is that Bill Manning is going to be the president of the Argonauts. At the same time, Bill Manning is the president of TFC. Now, could he have given up the title of president of the Argonauts? I suppose he could. But will Pinball be around to shepherd this thing for 10, 15 years? Probably not. And why would Bill Manning give up a title and then give up the money that comes with it? I think the actual role and duties that Pinball is going to be doing are going to be closer to what a president for most other organizations do than a GM. Is he going to decide who the second and third string quarterback are? No. But will he take Jeremiah Masoli to STK Steakhouse or the Keg and try and get a deal done? Yes. Will he decide who is going to be in their analytics department? No. But will he be sitting in front of the MLSE Board of Governors asking for money to put towards the analytics department? Yes. And so I think that is the actual value of Pinball, that Bill Manning has some help and some arsenal to get things done. And for Pinball, who you mentioned is a busy guy, well, what's in it for him other than his luck for the fan base and for the team? If I'm Pinball Clemens, I say I need the Masai Ujiri deal. And now you're going to pay me X, but you're also going to use your MLSE resources and some of that money to help my charitable arm. And so the same way MLSE is basically funding or helping to fund Giants of Africa, if I'm Pinball Clemens, I'm saying, fine, I have 18 jobs. I'm so West Indian, you don't even know it, and I'm not even West Indian. I am busy upon busy upon busy, but I will do this, but you need to help me in my other endeavors. So I expect to see some MLSE lift of the Pinball Foundation. That's how I would break down the deal to make sure there's something in it for him. Here's the other thing, and this is the busiest job in sports. Your boy, Dave Naylor, has speculated, because the next question was, who's the coach? Kari Jones is the same agent as Pinball does. Michael Shea's deal is up. They're former teammates. He already saw a former teammate in Orlando Steinhauer leverage the fact that the Argos were interested in a head coaching job in Hamilton. Could he potentially get another former teammate to come back? Dave Naylor has speculated the head coach that Pinball Clemens might hire might be Pinball Clemens. Do you see that happening? I don't, because he is so busy, and that's not a job you can half-step. But I also know that Dave Naylor doesn't just say things out of nowhere.
I don't think that Mike Pinball Clemens will be the next head coach. I don't, to your point, DJ, I get the notion that he has a lot going on off the field. I'm of the understanding that he's a businessman. He's big into his charities, as you spoke about.
Keynote speaker?
He's a keynote speaker. Look, the names that make sense are the names you mentioned. Kari Jones, which I think less likely, way less likely. I think Kari stays in Montreal. I think he's done a great job in Montreal. I think they don't let him go, and I think he's still...
Who's they, though? They don't have an owner.
with me and you, we're doing the league's podcast. We're partial. We're partial bosses. Hey, Kahari, tighten up or I'll fire you. So for Kahari, done a great job there. Special relationship. Seems like he has a great relationship with Vernon. He's gotten more out of Vernon than anybody else has got out of him, and it's been a good sample size. And also, he's still unproven. So to lure him away would take a lot. I'm sure his contract runs through whatever it runs through February or whatever it is. I'm sure the Alouettes will get him signed before that, and I'm sure he wouldn't risk because he's still somewhat unproven as a head coach. He wouldn't risk not getting a deal done staying there. Now, Mike O'Shea, right now, the way I see it, if I have to name a head coach or who I think will be the head coach of Argos next season, it's Corey Chamberlain. If it's not Corey Chamberlain, it's Mike O'Shea.
Hmm.
Do you have a wife, DJ?
I do.
How much of a priority is your wife and her family when it comes to your as you plan things?
Of chief importance.
Right. And I will say the same. Any of us who have a significant other and family, you understand the importance of that. Mike O'Shea's wife is from Ontario. Mike O'Shea's from Ontario. Mike O'Shea's son currently is playing college football in Ontario. That's family, family, and family. Now, Pinball Clemens and Mike O'Shea, how tight are they? Seemingly.
Very close.
Family. I add all those things together, and the fact that Mike O'Shea's contract is up after this year, there's no guarantee that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are going to make a commitment, a significant commitment. Could you see them putting a 4-year deal on the table right now, Winnipeg?
This goes back to whose choice
three-year
is it?
Deal?
The GMs or the presidents?
It's the presidents.
Because the GM is also family with Mike O'Shea. They're university teammates.
They are also tight. And I think, I believe that Kyle Walters, if it was Kyle's choice, then yes, he'll be there. But I don't think it's going to be Kyle's choice.
Right.
It's going to be Wade Miller's choice and the Board of Governors. If the Argos have decided they want to move away from Corey Chamberlain, which I don't know if they have, I'm a believer in Corey Chamberlain. His record, I think his record over his last 30-something games is abysmal. You know, they always say men lie, women lie, numbers don't. I believe they do in this case. I think Corey's a good coach. How long can I keep saying that without results? I don't know. Not that much longer. Maybe another year. I think he has bottom of the league talent right now. So to go back to Mike O'Shea, if they don't believe in Corey, and if Dave Naylor reports are correct that they're going to move on from Corey Chamberlain, and if it isn't Pinball, which me and you don't think it is, it wouldn't make sense to be Pinball. I can't see how it is. It makes no sense. He's not the time commitment doesn't make sense. He's going to be a motivator as a head coach. He's not going to coach the X's and O's of football. So if he's going to be a motivator and a figurehead, he could do that from the GM chair. He doesn't need to be the head coach. Except for he has to sit out of practice every day and sit in meetings, which don't make sense. And he's probably not going to get paid that much more, which I don't think he cares about anyway. That being said, if they move on from Corey, it's going to be Mike O'Shea. Because the Argos would also, the organization, MLSC and Pinball Clemens, would commit to Mike O'Shea for several years. If they really want him, they would have to commit for several years. Which, if you're Mike O'Shea and you can get a commitment for several years, which Winnipeg might not be willing to do right now, and you can get back home with your family, all that whole circle of family we just talked about, that's a done deal.
Here's what makes this fascinating and interesting for the Argos and MLSC. And if you don't take anything from this podcast, this is the one part you need to turn the volume up. The CFL and running a CFL team is inherently different than any other pro team that MLSC has to deal with. And here's why. There's not just a tax on player salary. There is a cap on football ops salaries. So if you say goodbye to Corey Chamberlain after the first year of his deal, and maybe some of... Sorry, after the second... If you say goodbye to Corey Chamberlain after the second year of his deal and some of his coaches, then what are you doing with that money? And if Pinball Clemens is going to be your head coach and basically he's going to be a motivator, you're going to need two very experienced coordinators that are basically the head coach on offense, the head coach on defense. That's going to be expensive. If you are bringing in Michael Shea and committing to him with some real resources, that's going to be expensive. So unlike the Raptors, where if you look at the bench, they've got more assistant coaches sometimes than they have players, because that's something that MLSC can just spend on. Or unlike TFC, where they can bring in designated imports whenever they want, that's something that MLSC can just spend on. Or unlike the Leafs, where they can pay Shanahan and pay Dubas and have Mike Babcock be the highest paid coach in the NHL by far, that's something MLSC can just spend on. This situation, you cannot just spend on your front office, on your coaches, because there's a cap on that as well. You have to be fiscally responsible. And that's why this model is going to be different, and this challenge is going to be really, really difficult. In Edmonton, they have a similar challenge, but are the questions about their head coaching staff and their front office going to be now put on pause because they have made the playoffs, or are there bigger issues to deal with? We break that down and more next on The Waggle. So we said we were going to answer some of the questions in Edmonton, the city of champions, and will they be champions soon again? Well, who else than to help us answer them for you than Morley Scott, play-by-play man for the Eskimos on 630 CHED and host of the E-Pod, another great CFL. Listen, thank you, Morley, for doing this. And so Edmonton, we now know, it is going to qualify for playoff football. So everyone can take a deep breath in Alberta. But is this coaching staff and this football ops group off the hook right now, or there's still some pressure on them?
Yeah, I think so, especially the coaching staff. Jason Moss has done a lot of good things with the coaching staff since he's been here. He's coached some terrific seasons out of a couple of quarterbacks, mainly Mike Riley and this year Trevor Harris, but they haven't played a home playoff game yet. They've got to the conference finals twice, once in the West, once in the East. But yeah, I think there's some pressure on them to win a couple of playoff games and do that this year. So indeed, as for Brock Sunderland, I look back at what he accomplished this year, and I don't know if he could have done much of a better job. I mean, he got handed a bad deal with the Mike Riley situation in the offseason because of why and how he left. And I think he hit a home run in making his moves at free agency day. The bad thing about it is it just didn't work out thanks to all the injuries. You know, we still haven't seen Sir Vincent Rogers play a game for the Eskimos. Jovan Santos-Knox just played his first game last weekend, and Trevor Harris is out right now. There's a lot of other guys who got injured who the Eskimos signed during that stretch as well that have been hurt and haven't played a lot. I like what Brock Sunderland did. I like Jason Moss as a coach, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You know, you look at the numbers he coaxes out of players, and it's terrific. But I think there is some pressure for them to have a good playoff run.
Well, it's fascinating, and sometimes success is your greatest enemy. We talked in the offseason, myself and Davis, about the fact that the Eskimos were prepared for free agency. They were ready. They had a plan with Mike and without, and they executed it pretty well, which is why people thought, okay, maybe even though they lost their best player, they grew the rest of the roster, and they would not just be back in the playoffs, but competing for a Grey Cup. It's almost like if when you work in sales, you know, sometimes if your sales projections are too good one year, that really puts a hamper on you the next year because people expect you to overperform. Do you think that if this team falls short of a Grey Cup, people naturally will be saying, well, I mean, Chris Jones got us one, you didn't. Where is the ring and the championship?
Yeah, I think there's people who have had higher expectations, and I think the way it's gone over the last couple of years, and I know there's already a lot of in town amongst the fan base, there is some finger pointing at Jason Moss, but I honestly, I know he does things unorthodox sometimes. I think the job he's done this year with this team has been terrific. He spent a lot of time in the off season trying to figure out a way to make this team a team quicker. He studied and he read books and he did all these great team building and team bonding experiences, not just through training camp, but right through the season, right up until where we are now in the season. And he believes that that's going to pay off. And he often talks about the two boxes that he wanted to be checked off first this year. And the first one was to become a team, to play for each other and to become a team. And the second box was to clinch a playoff spot and then let the rest fall where it falls. So right now he's completed the first two tasks, and we're going to have to wait over the next month to see how the third task comes come playoff time. But I really like what he's done this year to create a team atmosphere. And I mean, the Eskimos fell off the pace a little bit at the halfway mark, and I think that had a lot to do with injuries. They were 6-3 to start the season. Well, BC, who was in the same kind of situation, and I don't know what they did to create a team atmosphere or if they did anything, but they had a lot of changes as well, and they started the season with one win in their first half of the season. And again, I think Jason Moss got proactive with his team early on this year to try to start to build it, and he hopes it's going to pay off in the final month of the season.
Morley, fill us in on the contract situations or what you know of Brock Sunderland and Jason Moss. Are their contracts aligned? Are they both up at the same time at the end of this year?
I think they both got extensions, and you know that CFL contracts are a closely guarded secret, right? I think Jason has a year left, and I think Brock has a couple of years left. They both got extensions since their last contracts to add a year to it. So I think that's how it shakes down with Jason having a year left and Brock with a couple of years left, I believe.
So when you guys, the media out there in Edmonton, when people ask that question, I'm sure it's been asked if Jason's contract is up at the end of this year, which is what we have heard. He does not answer that, or what do you guys get from that?
You know what? It's not really come up that much this year in Edmonton. I mean, I think it's believed he's got 1 year left after this season. So there's still one more year in the books. I think that's, I don't know how accurate that is, but I think that's what the situation is after he got his extension at the end of last year or 2 years ago. So yeah, he got another year added onto his contract. So that's where it stands as far as I know.
You mentioned the health of the team. What's the word and the prognosis of Trevor Harris?
Well, I think if he had to play, if it was a playoff game last weekend in the game against the BC Lions, he might have been able to play in that game. I think we'll see him at practice when the Eskimos return from the bye week, and I think we'll see him play the final two games against the Saskatchewan Roughriders in Edmonton first and then in Regina to wrap up the season. He was on the field. I saw him on the field running around and throwing the football before the game on the weekend against the BC Lions, and looked good. I mean, he didn't look like he was in any pain. He didn't look like he was wincing. He looked like he had some zip on the football. I think, and I have no insider information on this, just from watching him play and just listening to the way Jason Moss has talked about him when we've talked with him over the last few days leading up to that game, I think that it's a situation when they come back from the bye week that Trevor Harris will be at practice, pulled off the 6-game injured list, and will take part in the final two games of the year to knock the rust off and try and get ready for wherever they play in the playoffs, whether it be probably in the Eastern Conference semifinal or in the West if things really fall their way.
The West is a beast with Calgary, with Bo healthy, Saskatchewan's been great all year. Winnipeg started fast, and now they seem to got their stride back. The players, and Jason Moss will never say this, but is the best opportunity for this Eskimos team to get to and potentially win a Grey Cup, is it going through the East as a crossover team? No team has done it in one, but this year specifically, is that the best route?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we've been saying that for years, have we not? Like, the team that goes from the West to the East is going to have a clear route to the Grey Cup. It's never happened. Like, no one's ever got there. And I think this year the East is stronger than it's been in a lot of years. I mean, usually that second-place team in the East is under 500, right? And this year, the Alouettes are a pretty good football team. They're a dynamic team. They're an exciting team to watch, and they're a team that wins their fair share of games. They've led from wire to wire. They've had comeback wins. They've done it all. So I think, and Hamilton's the best team in the league right now, right? You can't argue with that. Their record tells you that. So I think this year is tougher than any other year if you're going through the East. But I'm a firm believer that, you know, everyone says it's easy to go, or it's easier to go through the East. If it was easier, wouldn't it have been done by now? I mean, the East is always found a way to win, you know, even if the Western team had, what, 3 or 4 teams. I know the Eskimos did it a couple of years ago. I think in 16 it was. They won in Hamilton and went to Ottawa for the East Final. A couple of teams have got to the East Final, but they've never been able to win it. And I just think going back and forth or staying out there for the week, however you approach it, I think it just takes too much out of your team at that time of the year. And I think it's a lot easier to travel-wise if you stay in the West, because it's just more of a comfort zone for you. But I don't know. Maybe because the East is better, it's going to bring out better things in the crossover team. I don't know. But I don't believe that the East is an easier route than the West. The West has got great teams in it for sure, and Calgary's really rolling right now. Saskatchewan's been good pretty much since week 3 or 4 this year. Winnipeg's kind of a question mark because of their quarterbacking situation and the way they play. But, man, they got a killer defense. They can beat you just with their defensive line. They don't need a lot of touchdowns from their offense to beat you. So the West is going to be tough for sure, but I'm not convinced that the East is going to be easier.
Morley, Scott, I'm with you. It's not. I agree that it has been in the past, but the East is not easier. We've seen historically that when we think it's an easier route, as DJ said, nobody has gotten through. And this year, if you think it is an easier route, this year wouldn't be the time. Explain this defense to me, this Eskimo 2019 version. I don't know what to take of this defense. What's the difference that you see between this Philip Lawley defense and the Mike Benavidez defense from 2018?
Pressure, plain and simple. They just get after the quarterback. Philip Lawley's philosophy was, if they're going to block me with 5, I'm going to send 6. If they're going to block me with 6, I'm going to send 7. He just likes to send as many guys as he can, and he just wants to get to the quarterback. That's what made them so successful early in the season. The Eskimos started the year 6-3, and their defense was terrific. I mean, the Eskimos are kind of a weird-looking team when you look at the stats and how good they are offensively, numbers-wise, and how good they are defensively, numbers-wise. To say, if you look at the stats and then said that this is a 500 team, it'd be kind of surprising, really. But the defense, I think, got away from their trademark pressure about mid-season. I think they had some issues. I think teams were figuring them out and knew the pressure was coming and figured out ways to stop it. But we talked last week on our broadcast in that game against the Lions that this was the defense we saw early in the season. They sent guys. They got pressure. They got to Mike Riley early before he left the game, and then they got to Danny O'Brien late after he came in. They got back to their roots, I thought, in the game against the BC Lions, bringing lots of pressure, and that's the way they operate. And if they're going to be successful, they're going to get sacks. They're going to take away time and space from the quarterback.
The secondary over the last month, excluding last week, has looked vulnerable to me at times. Guys running free, busted coverages. What is it that you've seen or you've heard, or what's coming out of the Eskimos locker room about the secondary play over the last month, which has got to be concerning heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And it's a key. I think they have a good secondary when they can get everybody in their right positions and play and be healthy. That's been the biggest problem. Anthony Orange has been on the 6-game injured list twice. Arjun Colquhoun's on the 6-game injured list now with Orange. They've had guys who've been forced to move around. Tyquan Glass and Josh Johnson, they've played pretty much every position in the defensive backfield because they've had to move them both around because of injuries. They haven't had their A lineup out on the field very often this year, except for the first couple of games when they went 2-0. Anthony Orange got hurt after they went 2-0 and beat the BC Lions in their second game of the year at Commonwealth. Anthony Orange got hurt in practice the next week and went on the 6-game injury list. And that was the last time they had their guys in the defensive backfield who they wanted there, playing the positions they want them to play. That's another question injury-wise, if they could get those guys back. If Josh Johnson, who was a quote-unquote healthy scratch, but was scratched because he's been banged up and nicked up on the game on the weekend against BC, if he can get back into the lineup, if they can get Arjun Colquhoun back in the lineup to play the wide side corner, I think they'll be a better team if they can get healthy and get the guys playing where they want them to play, where they need them to play, and get that cohesiveness as a unit back there. Because you guys know, you gotta it's teamwork back there. You got to be able to play together back there, and they just haven't been able to put the 5 guys back there that they want all season.
Last question for you, and this is this is the tough one, right? Who's the best team in the West right now, Morley?
I got to say Calgary. I think the season turned for them during the Labor Day series against
the Eskimos. Why are they better than Saskatchewan?
I think I give the nod to Calgary right now because they've got experience And they got a better quarterback, in my mind, in Bo Levi Mitchell. Cody Fajardo has been, I think, one of the great stories of this CFL season, his emergence as a starter, as a go-to guy, as a really good quarterback. But you know what? I'm in the Ric Flair camp. If you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. And I've learned over the last 4 or 5 years that we keep saying this is the year Calgary takes a step back. And what happens? They don't. And then you say, well, this is the year they take a step back. And what happens? They don't. And then this year we're saying that after they had a shaky start, we're going, well, there's just been too much erosion over the last 3 or 4 years. They've just lost too many guys to free agency, too many guys to the NFL. Finally, the year that they're going to step back is this year. And then, boom, they turn the corner at the halfway mark. And I think, along with Hamilton, they're the best team in the league right now. So the West, to me, goes through Calgary in more ways than one, of course, with the Grey Cup game being there.
Well, you would know because you've seen them a bunch. I'm still holding out hope that Edmonton does cross over and goes through the East and we could have a Calgary-Edmonton Grey Cup.
It would be a lot of fun because, you know, we thought it was coming years before, right? And it never did materialize. So this is the year that maybe it can happen. And to be in one of those two cities with the game in Calgary this year, it would be spectacular, I think. I think there's a few other teams will have something to say about that, though.
Yeah, the atmosphere in the stadium and in the entire province would be amazing. Thank you for this, and thank you for the amazing work you continue to do. Play-by-play for Edmonton Eskimos on 630 CHED. And listen, even if you're not in the market, feel free to listen online, 630CHED.com. And the ePod, breaking down everything Edmonton Eskimos. It's a great listen as well. And give him a follow on IG. It's Morley underscore Scott. Thanks so much for this, Morley.
Always a pleasure, guys. Good to talk to you.
Speaking of Alberta, listen up, fans. The CFL and Athabasca University are excited to share with you the launch of their National Grey Cup Sweepstakes contest that will provide two lucky fans a chance to watch the Grey Cup live in Calgary. The pop quiz allows fans to further connect with our game and imagine their place on the field through a simple and fun questionnaire. Be sure to take the National Grey Cup Sweepstakes contest prior to the deadline of Friday, November 8th, 2019, and you'll be entered to win the grand prize of a flight for two to Calgary. Hotel accommodations for 3 nights, that's from Friday, November 22nd to Sunday, November 24th, and again, 2 tickets to the Grey Cup to be played at McMahon Stadium on November 23rd. Fourth. Find out who your player persona is and enter by visiting cfl.ca/Athabasca. So I mentioned it and Morley spoke to it, how heated the contest is out West and really how heated the contest is for the top of the West. All 6 playoff spots have now been decided. Montreal is back in the playoffs for the first time since 2014. The Bombers play the Stamps a couple more times, and the Bombers were able to snap their losing streak, their 3-game skid. They look like maybe they will have a say in who wins the division if they don't win it themselves. And it's important to figure this out. I mean, Saskatchewan hasn't won the West in 10 years, but more importantly, 2013 was the last time a team in the West didn't finish first and made it to the Grey Cup. So if you want to get there through the West, you need a bye, and you need home field advantage. So let's break down the 3 contenders. Calgary sits at 10-5. They've got the tiebreaker over Saskatchewan with that win. They finish the season hosting Winnipeg, going to Winnipeg, and then going to BC. Saskatchewan is at 10-5. They host they go to BC this week. They go to Edmonton, and then they've got the home and home where they end the season hosting Edmonton. Winnipeg has the game in hand. They played one more game. They are 10-6. They finished their season going to Calgary and then hosting Calgary. 2-part question for you, Davis Sanchez. Do you need the number one overall seed in the West to make the Grey Cup? And who is going to be that number one overall seed?
You don't need it, but
It would be nice.
Yeah, as you alluded to, and as history tells us, it's tough to do it without. Look, if you know, football is a violent game. The fact that you get a week to prepare, game plan, and then also taking care of your bodies as that host team, you know, that whole rest versus rust thing, you know, teams like the Hamilton Tiger Cats are going to be a great example. We're talking East now, but
Well, but speak to it though, because you've been in the situation. Is it real? What would you prefer, the rest or the potential rest?
It is absolutely asinine and ludicrous for anybody to think that there is some advantage in the rest scenario of playing a week before and being in a rhythm in a versus a team that's rested. I'll take the rest all day long. I'll take a bye week. You're fresher, you're faster, you're stronger. If there is rust, that rust goes away in the first 5 minutes of the game. You'll see, and the rust is only offensive anyway. That rust doesn't affect defenses. You don't get rust from hitting. Just offense is a timing thing. And if you haven't played live reps for a month, which will be the reality for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, you could be rusty because you can't emulate that in practice. Defensively, it's an emotion. It's more of an emotional execution on how you obviously got to know the calls and line up where you need to line up. But once the ball snapped, it doesn't really change. Your depth doesn't change in a route because of the heightened emotion of a playoff game, and the speed doesn't change. Whereas, I take that back. Speed might change, but you're only going to be faster on defense. And if you're faster, it doesn't affect you in a negative way. Whereas offensively, timing-wise, if you're moving too fast, it can affect you and in a negative way and throw off the timing. That being said, rest is the key. The teams that get rest are going to – I could say it right now. The teams that host the East and the West are highly likely – to get to the Grey Cup, and I'm saying that looking at the teams that are probably going to host, and they're probably going to advance. Now, it's going to be very tough for anybody to beat Calgary in Calgary. Because of Bo Levi Mitchell, Dane Evans never played in a playoff game before. There's more chance, and he also is a guy who takes risk. There's more chance of Montreal. I'm not leaving Edmonton out of this, but let's just say Montreal wins the semi. There's more chance Montreal could beat Hamilton in an East semi or in the East final than Sask can beat Calgary. And I'm saying that strictly on quarterback play.
I want to finish the conversation.
Sorry, Winnipeg.
West. No.
Till I see some better play out of your pivot. I can't even put you in the conversation. I do love you. I love the team. I do. I picked Edmonton. I picked Winnipeg from the first week. I love what the Bombers brought to the table. And I'm not the biggest Matt Nichols fan, but I still – you don't know what you got until it's gone. And for those who wanted Streveler in the last year, I told you guys, no, Matt Nichols is a better option. Anyway, that being said, the team is a all-around good team. Now, all of a sudden, their secondary looks suspect, and their quarterback play is suspect. And I was holding on to the back of the bandwagon, and I just with one hand, and I jumped off.
Well, they have a new quarterback.
I see him on the field, I don't know what they do.
A fifth-round pick that can move up to.
I heard they have a new quarterback, but I haven't seen him.
They made a deadline move. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Zach Claros playing football before the end of the season.
Is he even there? Is he even in town? Have you seen him in town?
I mean, I'm not in Winnipeg, so no. Before we
get Earl's at Earl's Polo Park, that's the spot, by the way,
in Winnipeg.
What?
I don't have any Winnipeg
after the
spots.
Game. What?
I've been to Winnipeg once in my life, and
after the
they
game,
told me you had to plug your car in the winter. I'm like, this is not the place for me.
It's like a Roxy. It's like the Vancouver version of the Roxy or something. Just a place you got to go after the game. Anyway, come on, focus up on the pod.
I'm just thinking, Roxy kind of overrated, but whatever. Before we go back west, I want to head out east and get a little love, little dap to 10K SJ SJ Green.
Oh, and over the top, 10K. S.J. Green has now joined the 10,000-yard club. And that, my friends, is a ticket to the Hall of Fame.
18th receiver to reach the 10,000 receiving yard mark. Since it's an Argos story, it would only be right if we let Pinball give him a little shout.
Bring him in?
Yes.
Let's bring him in.
So, you know what? I love about Mr. Green, right, is as good of a player he is, he's a better man.
Is that right?
He is what we call a force multiplier. Everyone around him, just by his energy, his infectious attitude and love for the game and for people, right? Because ultimately, this is a game about people. It's not about yards and passes, it's about people. His ability to move people allows you to move mountains, right? And so what I want to do is I want to say thank you, SJ. You have given us so much. I want to give you some love. Give me some love. Give me some love.
Thank you, Pinball. Thanks for joining us, Pinner. Appreciate you. And, thanks for joining us on the Wagon, DJ.
If I could be anyone when I grow up, it would be Pinball Clements. Like, he might be my favorite person. Him or Barack. But I think I would choose Pinball because he could run a nice 9 route. I don't think Barack could do that. SJ Green could run every route in the route tree. You played with him. You've seen his ascension throughout his career. You also saw him a couple years ago on the turf holding a knee. People thought it was going to be the end of his career. What's the thing that stands out to you about him and reaching this milestone?
When he was, his first year in Montreal was 07. I was with him when he was a rookie. He was on the practice squad, and this is what stands out. Almost 2 years on that practice squad, and he worked every day. And you hear a lot of stories like that. Everyone who, you know, guys were on a practice squad or waiting for their opportunity, and they worked every day. And that's, you know, here's the difference. You're going to do that because you have to. If you're on a practice squad, that's why you hear every story about a guy who was waiting for his turn of backup, and they always say he was a hard worker waiting for his opportunity. You know what? If you're a backup and you're not working hard, you're not going to be there. So that's why. But the difference with SJ was he was talented, extremely talented. We also had Chad Owens as a backup at that time, a practice roster guy. We also had, I believe the next year he came in, and SJ was still on PR, we had Andrew Hawkins, who ended up playing 7 years in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about Chad Owens, Andrew Hawkins, and SJ Green, a Hall of Famer potentially.
And those are the guys giving you a look on
defense.
These
are the guys, yes. So the fact that SJ was so talented, But that just shows you how deep our team was and how deep the receiving core was. It was Kerry Watkins, Ben Cahoon, Jamel Richardson, Brian Braddon. These were the guys that were ahead of him, so there was no spot. But SJ was putting in work, and he was better. I knew, and us on defense knew, SJ was better than most receivers or most of the starting receivers in the league in his first and second year on PR, and we knew he was going to be that good. And most guys who are watching film every day and looking at all the guys around the league and realizing that I should be playing, I'm better than these guys, I don't know if they have it in them to sit there day in and day out and stay on that and the pursuit of the grind like SJ had to wait for his opportunity. So it's that much sweeter for him to do what he did in Montreal after waiting his turn. It was great to see. He didn't say anything. He just worked and kept his head down, and he would get pissed off. And a lot of times, he was competitive in practice. He would, you know, we would tell him to slow down because we were more vets trying to relax. And we'd tell him to slow down and thing. And he was trying to go off on us because he was hungry and he knew it. So for him to go through all that to get where he's at now and now be a potential Hall of Famer and one of the top 20 receivers in the history of the league, hats off to him. And it's well deserved.
Yeah, the thing that jumps out to me is two things. One, it's clearly in the gene pool, because if you follow SJ, he posts regularly his kids killing people in Pop Warner football. So I think we may see another Green play professional football later. But the other thing, not only did he get this mark, it's not like he limped past 10,000 and barely got there. A lot of times when guys break records, it's at the end of their career. You're giving them shovel passes just to break the record. I don't know. Like, he is
Whoa, are you taking shots at the touchdown Beagle right now?
Well, is that how he got his?
I feel like Milt Stegall broke the record on a shovel pass. I think you're taking shots at Milt
No, not at all. But also,
Milt, hey guys, at Milt Stegall, about Donovan hating on him right now. That's crazy, DJ. That's my guy.
Hold on a second.
Wow.
Milt probably did limp to that record because his records are so far in advance of it. When you look at the numbers of what Milt and G-Roy did, it is stupid. Like, they are so far and away in front of the rest of the competition. So, yeah, he probably did limp to the finish line because he was damn near 40 by the time he was breaking those records. No, the thing is he running nines and sevens and eights as much? Not as much.
No.
He's killing you with fours and fives and sixes on the route tree because his routes are precise. So he's still dominant, although it's in a different way. I love the fact that he, as his career has changed, he's expanded his game to still be a competitive football player. And actually, he's doing it now, not with Calvillo or Ray. He's not doing it with guys who are putting it on a plate for him to make plays. So shout out to SJ, one of my favorite players in the league. Davis, another favorite player of ours in the league, Mike Riley.
Mm.
Tough injury. So tough. Tough to watch, but also tough to hear him tell his teammates as he was mic'd up exactly how bad the injury was.
I think it's broke, man.
Oh, boy.
So now, basically, every starter in week one will have missed time due to injury. Mike Riley, the last man standing. Your first thoughts when you saw him walking off with a broken wrist?
Well, I heard the same thing. I heard it live. I could hear him say it. And then the broadcast went back and replayed it. So we knew it was done right away. I think, how about the off season when I see things like that? Because you knew their season was over. And I can't imagine. And I've never had this. I was fortunate enough to never go into and have a late injury and then go into an off season, having to spend the whole off season after a somewhat meaningless game for them. The chances were slim. It wasn't meaningless, but still chances slim of them.
They needed to win their last four and have Edmonton lose their last
right.
two.
So pretty much meaningless, all things considered. And then now have to spend your whole off season instead of enjoying your family, enjoying some R&R and then training, you're going straight to rehab. And that's a tough deal. And also, shout out to Aaron Grimes, halfback, all-star, and a heck of a player and leader for those BC Lions. He tore his ACL, which is even tougher. In you know, similar situation, Grimes is a guy that plays extremely hard. Let's say this real fast, and we're going to get out of here. But when you're a guy that plays 100 miles an hour, and you know that you're what you're playing for is in question, it's not a playoff game. It's not fighting. There's a very slim chance you're going to make the playoffs, and you go out there and you fly around still, and you put in the effort like Aaron Grimes and Mike Riley did, and then you get hurt. And for Grimes, an ACL is something that's real tough to – not tough to come back from any more with modern medicine, but just the grind that you have to do daily to recover. He's not going to the beach now next week with his family or in a month with his family and enjoying his offseason. He's going straight to rehab every day for 3 hours. Then he's going to the gym. Then he's going to out in the field to run routes or to do field drills. That's a tough grind. And so I feel – emotionally, it's really life changing, and so I feel for those guys, and my heart goes out to anyone who gets hurt, but especially guys getting hurt here at the end of the season in games that don't mean a lot. It's tough to play. It's real tough to play in those games. I can vouch for that.
Well, that brings me to my last thought for objectionable conduct. And did you hear the sound that came out of the BC Lions locker room from the players, not from the coaches, from the players after that loss, including Mike Riley?
No.
So I'll play it for you.
Hey, man, look around this room, man. Look around this room. Look at your brother, man. We've been in this shit since the beginning. Look from where we started to look to where we came, bro. We done came a long way. New coaches knew everything. But at the end of the day, we still got to take care of business, no matter what. So these last two games, bro, give me everything you got. Even though they don't mean that, give me everything you got. Because at the end of the day, you got to represent that name on the back of your jersey and that name on the front.
Don't mean nothing, but it means everything.
Exactly.
Everything.
Hey, if there's a shred of you that thinks it don't mean nothing, look yourself in the mirror, man.
Right.
You get an opportunity to go out on a field and play football for a living, all right?
Less.
I'm not the only one that got taken out tonight. I know there's other guys that don't get to be out there on the field the next two games.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do anything to be out there, right? So take advantage of it. Play BC Lion football, and let's go fuck things up for the rest of the West these last two games, fellas. All right?
Yes, sir.
Play for the pride, play for each other, play for yourself, and play for what we're doing, man. All right? Keep fighting, man.
Let's go, man. Together, we got to stand there, man. Family on three. One, two, three. Family. Yes, sir.
So that was TJ Lee, that was Odell, and then Mike Riley, and then TJ Lee came in and said, it means nothing, but it means everything. I get where those guys are coming from, because it's a rare opportunity, it's a great opportunity to go out there and play professional football.
They don't hand those jerseys to everybody.
They don't. It means nothing.
Because?
It means nothing. So you have to have that mentality like those guys have, and you need to say that, and you need to go out there, because there's coaches that are, their jobs are on the line. Your job as a player, some of those guys are fighting for jobs next year. Those guys are fighting for the job. It means everything to those guys.
Eye in the sky doesn't lie.
It doesn't. But for guys, I promise you this, for guys who are solidified, for guys who are bona fide, for veterans who have their place next year, for a guy like TJ Lee, who is a star player on that team, it means nothing. No one cares how good he does. No one cares the plays he makes. And that's the reality of it. I hate to be the somber police or the reality checker. It means nothing, and I hate it. I hate games like that. I hate situations like that. It doesn't mean you don't try. It doesn't mean you don't put effort in for your coaches, for your teammates, for your brothers, for the fans. But the reality is, it means nothing.
And that's what my last question for you is in this random objectionable conduct where I hit you with something that you don't expect. So philosophers say that there's two different types of motivation. There is...
By the way, that's just keeping it 100. I can give you the fluff and tell you it means everything and rah rah, and that's a great speech. But to be frank and be 100 means nothing.
Well, I think it depends how you're wired, because there's two types of motivation, right? There's avoidance motivation, and then there's approach motivation. So avoidance motivation is motivation out of fear, whether it's real or perceived. I might lose my job. I might lose my opportunity. I may lose some money in the off season. I might get hurt. Approach motivation is motivation out of what you can gain. I might get a new contract. I might show out for my family who's watching in the stands. Or this game is on TV back home. Right? So we're all wired differently, and self-assessment is important so that you know what motivates you. Teams who are going for the Grey Cup, they're probably filled with guys who are approach motivation. I can lift it. I can touch it. But there's some guys who always have a chip on their shoulder no matter what. Banks is always trying to prove something to someone. He's more of an avoidance motivation person. He's got that literal chip on his shoulder. I think what we heard there was guys being motivated even though there was nothing to gain. Right? There's nothing literally to gain in terms of the wins and losses won't matter, right? So it's avoidance of putting bad film out there, having some self-respect. What motivated you as a player? When you were lifting weights, were you thinking, man, I want to be all pro? Or were you thinking, man, I want to make sure that I get 18 checks this year? Like, did the fear drive you and motivate you? Or did the potential gain and success motivate you? Because it manifests even in our everyday lives.
It's a good question. And the answer is there were different stages.
Mm.
Initially, as a draft pick and a Canadian draft pick, it motivated me to prove that I belonged in pro football. And then once I became a starter and I made the team, after my first year, I knew skill set wise, I was as good as anybody in the league at my position, regardless of nationality. So now I wanted to prove I was the best. I wanted to prove I was the best corner in the league, regardless of nationality. And I proved that. And I got my shot, all star. I got my shot and went down to the NFL, came back, now I'm got the big contracts and I'm an all-star again. And so I've proved there's not a nationality issue. It's not, I'm not here because I'm Canadian. I know, and it's not, I'm the best in my position or one of the best in my position. Then I got older and it became, now I'm in survival mode. Now I'm not the best anymore. I'm 30 and I played, you know, a long time after I was 30, and I was far from the best from 30 years old until 36. In the last 6 years, I definitely wasn't the best. I was definitely just hanging on, trying to get those checks, trying to stay on a team and keep being a professional football player. That was survival mode. And that was trying to be good enough to not let my team down, to be. And at that point, I changed from being cocky and brash and you can't hang with me, I'm the man, to a sense of humility, a sense of becoming a real student of the game, trying to help the other young Canadian players in particular, but help everyone I could to be of value, because that's how I knew I'd keep my job, by being a good teammate, being helpful, and being a student, and get everything I can out of the limited athletic ability that I had. So different phases is the answer.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, what would it be for you now, right? Because even if you look in our everyday lives, there's situations of approach and avoidance, motivation, like that, and it could be different. So, for example, men are more often approach, and say if you men who put a child in a little baby Bjorn, they put it facing out because they want their kid to see the world, to see what they can go get. Moms more often are avoidance.
Really?
They face generality, but yeah. More often they have the baby facing them because they want to shield the baby. They want to make sure the baby's okay. So it changes based on kind of, you know, life situation. So what?
That's so fun. I put my daughter facing out all the time. I don't want her to stare at my chest. I want to be able to look out and see things like I would want. Like, what would you want?
I would not want to stare at your chest.
Right.
No, I would
like you want, but you, my point is, yes, not about my chest or my jacket. My point is that I want my daughter, when we're walking, to be able to look and see everything around. Yeah. That's what I would want.
See, I'm 100% approach.
You the same?
I'm 100%. Yeah. Maybe it's irrational. Like, I have this, I don't have enough fear, but I'm more about, like, let's go and conquer. What can I go get? Not what am I going to lose?
So let me flip the question to you in the media game, because your rise and your enter into media and your rise in media is similar to mine in pro football. You came in as a young kid from university with no real cachet in the media game. You're not an ex-player. You had to come in from, you had to start from the bottom, mm-hmm. and you rose to being one of the, you know, a well-known guy in Canadian sports media. What was your approach, and what is your approach?
Interesting. So, and just the same way how you said it was stages, it's stages. So to start, coming in as an intern, I'm at this fork in the road where either football is going to take me farther or I need to use football to take me farther. I can't say no to an opportunity. What do you need me to do? I'll do anything, right? It was basically, I'm not good enough to turn down any opportunity. So certainly there was, you know, fear motivating that, right? Because now life is real. You need to get a real job. You need to start to work towards a career. So it was certainly avoidance of being a failure, right? Having your ego change in terms of, I've always been known as a football player. Now I need to be known as something else. But I would say maybe now it's more so of, okay, well, I need to be smart. And if I'm trying to approach what I want, the avoidance is, how do I not take on too much? How do I have some kind of stillness in my life? How do I have enough confidence to say no to something so that I can approach greatness on the things that I'm doing,
Speak. But
avoid being too busy, right? There's a saying that goes, Ryan Holiday, he's an author, and there's a saying that goes, autonomy and success are the same thing. So basically, if you're successful, but yet you have to say yes to everything, well, what's the point of being successful? The point of being successful is the fact that you can be a bit more choosy. You can use life's greatest resources, which is your actual time. So that fear, the avoidance of, man, if I say no to things, well, what was my boss going to think? Do I need to take on everything? That's actually, you're not acknowledging that you have become a success. So to answer your question, it has certainly changed. But now I'm in more of an approach motivation phase where to get in, it was certainly avoidance. It was, what do you need me to do? Middle of the night? Part-time? For free? Done. But now life changes, and you have family and kids and different motivations, and everything is a cost-benefit analysis on, will this make me greater? Yes or no? If no, then I'm not interested.
I love your perspective on that.
I love yours. This is a football podcast, but it ends up being a podcast about life, relationships, and that's what's beautiful about the game of football. A beauty for sure is John Bowman, who I suspect, and we'll have to ask him next time we get him on the pod, is someone who's more avoidance. The fact that he was doubted and down and out has motivated him, but guess what? The Alouettes, they are approaching an opportunity to do something really special and give him another cup on his way out. Here's an essay about Bowman and the Alouettes chasing their dreams once again.
Winning isn't guaranteed, but having a chance to during the meritocracy that is in-game competition is what fans and players crave. The man that instills that hope at Percival Molson is John Bowman. He's earned that right. Long gone are all the all-time greats, Calvillo, Cahoon, Cox. As those C's continually left the building, the captaincy fell to the shoulders of one man. Now Bowman is the sole Hall of Famer left on the roster. He's been the constant, the common denominator. Through the glory days and gory days, he's been on the field where he's left everything, including his blood, sweat, and tears. They say teams embody their leaders. This rendition embodies Bowman and his legendary story. Not much expected early. In fact, he was never supposed to be here. 1 year of high school football, Division II in college, was found in the National Indoor Football League before coming north to hunt sacks. He had to scratch and claw for everything he got. 14 seasons later, all with the Alouettes, closer to his 40th birthday than his 30th, he's still defying the odds. And this year, so are they. He's lifted the Grey Cup twice, on teams that were loaded, among the greatest teams ever assembled. But in what likely is his final year, if he wins this Grey Cup with this team, it would be more fitting. It would be in line with his story. Because it wasn't supposed to happen. It was a long shot, but it had the necessary ingredients of hope and hunger. You can feel the era of change sweep over the franchise. New QB, new coach, new front office, soon to be new ownership. They even have new jerseys and a new logo. The buzz is back in Montreal. But among all that new, one old face remains. The Owls are back, but John Bowman never left. Now all that's left is for them to give him the exit he deserves after he carried the franchise for so long.
And finally, we have on the Waggle this season someone who we're constantly hearing via social media that the fans want to hear from because he is one of, if not the most popular players in the league. Bo Levi Mitchell joins us. And Bo, you appreciate you doing this. You're just literally coming out of chapel to kind of join us. So thank you for taking the time.
No, absolutely, man. Yeah, we had chapel switch around on time and wanted to make sure I got you guys. You're always talking about me, but never talking to me, so I figured I had to be on the show.
Well, before we talk to you about your game, let's talk about what you're doing. Chapel, why is that something important for you and for the team?
I think one thing that we're all starting to realize is, you know, that mentorship is a huge part of our lives. Just having and believing in something, you know, bigger than yourself, you know, not pushing religion on anybody, you know, because you don't have to be religious to come into our chapel. You know, Rod does a great job about relating everything he talks about just to life in general and relationships, whether it's with your wife, your family, whatever it might be. But just something that kind of brings you back down to earth every day and gets you thinking a little bit more than just football on a daily basis.
How's you thinking about not just yourself? You're one of the vets on the team. I won't say one of the older guys, one of the vets, but is there a guy or a group of guys that you've been able to take under your wing since you've been through it and seen a bunch in the game?
Yeah, man. I mean, I think each year, you know, as you become more of a vet, you kind of seek out the guy that maybe he has the talent or he has the potential, but maybe doesn't have the confidence. And you think he can kind of get to a level of, you know, maybe higher than what he sees out of himself. And I think that's, you know, when the Meade, Smitty, Jay Wall, Law, you know, Bergman even, like, you kind of just talk to those guys and just encourage them a little bit. You know, use an apt word at the right time just to kind of encourage those guys to let them know, like, hey, man, like, there's guys behind you and we believe in you, but you got to believe in yourself to kind of get to that point you want to get to. But, yeah, I mean, just speaking about, you know, discipleship or whatnot, mentorship, is that Rod does such a great job of teaching us all to use words in the right way. You know, we all kind of grow up in a locker room, and you grow up your entire life talking trash to your teammates in a funny way, you know, but just understanding that at times, you know, that encouraging word is what can really pick somebody up and kind of help push you to another level. That's kind of something we're trying to use in our locker room to continue to build that great locker room, because the great cup teams I've been on in the past, you know, the locker room has been the best part of it. You know, guys are tight, guys hang out. You never have a risk in that locker room, but you know, the ones that you do, you know, those are the times we've lost a great cup or not made it there. So I definitely see a big difference in it, and that's why, you know, I was going to try to help push that as well.
You mentioned confidence. It's not something that you lack, or at least from the outside looking in. Has that always been the case? And if so, where does it come from?
I mean, I don't think always, you know, because I wasn't always the most talented guy out there. You know, I didn't start really throwing a spiral to like my junior year of high school. You know, you're learning your body, you're learning, you know, really just the game itself, and you're trying to learn your place in that game. Like, man, is this where I belong? Is this the position I should be playing? You know, should I be on the baseball field more often? You know, I think we all have those questions of doubt, and then, you know, plays start to be made, but really coaches or somebody starts to encourage you and tell you that you can be that guy. But yeah, I mean, confidence is something that, to me, I think once I started playing great at a younger age, I started to realize, you know, okay, how do I capture my locker room? How do I capture my team and, you know, help try to take us to another level? And one thing I always found was that being confident, man, the guys around you responded to, especially at the quarterback position. You know, they want somebody who touches the ball every play to be confident about what he's doing. You know, even if it's a bad play, like, oh, don't worry about it, I'm going to make the next one. You know, speaking perfectly of last week, just throwing the pick six and just going to guys like, don't worry about it, I'm about to come back. We're going to drive down. We drove down, score a touchdown, and they drive. And I think confidence is almost something that we use, you know, sometimes as a mask, you know, maybe to hide nerves or fear, whatever it might be. But the majority of the time, it's got to be real, because your teammates can see through the bullshit. You know, they know if it's fake, they know if it's a facade. So you gotta be confident. You gotta show why you're confident and kind of step into that role every single chance you get.
Well, role you've stepped into is in a way being a little bit part of the media. You got the Bo Show with Bo Levi Mitchell on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. So that kind of, in a way, makes us teammates since we both work for Sportsnet. And you do keep it real on there. The show's Wednesdays from 3 to 4 locally. What has that transition been like? You said, you know, you have to come on and talk to us because we're always talking about you. Well, we have nothing left to say because you tell us your stories straight from you. What's that been like being, you know, on the other side of the microphone?
Yeah, I think it's been a positive experience, but a learning experience as well, trying to, like, understand, like, when I have interviews with guys, understanding how to word questions the right way where that guy might not feel like you're attacking him, you know, and how to not sound, you know, for lack of better words, like a prick on the radio, you know, just talking about yourself, but trying to talk about, to me, places that the game can be built. You know, being American, being up here, but having a voice, I want to talk about the things that I think can help build our game. You know, whatever, you know, maybe those small problems I think might be there. But yeah, just, it gives you a chance to kind of get out there and just kind of speak your own voice. and maybe go into detail on certain things that, you know, for us as athletes can always get so misconstrued because, you know, our 5-minute quote might turn into a, you know, a 5-word headline, you know, so that you always got to, you know, you start to learn really how to, you know, say something but tell them nothing, you know, the old cliche thing that we use a lot. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fun, it's positive. I just love sports. I love talking about sports. So it gives me a chance to get out there and do that. And, you know, not always just have the camera in your face where you're so worried about what you're going to say, but having your own show where you can kind of choose the topics and have fun with it.
And you do the show with Ryan Pinder and Pat Steinberg, who both do a great job. And I love the fact that you guys don't just keep it to football. You're talking about the Astros and playoff baseball. You have an acumen and a knowledge for not just the sport that you play, but sports in general. So I'd be remiss if I didn't get your Astros take right now, since you're a proud repper of all things Texas.
Yeah, man, I mean, honestly, I'd say going towards the end of the season, I was a little bit disappointed how we finished. I always got a running bet with Mueller because he's a huge A's fan. And, yeah, I want to say they went like 6-4 or 7-3 against us in the last 10 games we played against them. And, like, granted, yeah, they got hot. But to me, like, I think we kind of stumbled into the playoffs a little bit. Like, I would have loved to see us just really start picking up going to playoffs. And I thought we made some good acquisitions. You know, I know people in Canada specifically, you know, maybe didn't love Aaron Sanchez at a point because of the injuries. But I was pretty pumped because I'm looking at our depth and I'm thinking, okay, we got Zach Greinke as a 3. Now you're talking about Aaron Sanchez as, you know, your number 4 guy or a guy that can come in as a long reliever. And that's exciting, you know. So, yeah, I mean, baseball has always been there for me for my life. You know, every single one of me and my brothers were all huge Astros fans. We're always texting about the games. But, yeah, I would say we made a little bit of a bad decision going to Verlander on game 4 that quick and not trusting our 4 or 5. Losing that one, then we got to use Cole in game 5 against the Rays. And now that means we got to kind of almost limp into the series with Greinke as our number 1. And you saw that worked out. You know, now he's 0-2 in the playoffs. Yeah, man, I mean, Verlander came in. You know, he pitched maybe not always like himself. You know, he's only on 4 days rest, coming off a game where he just pitched off 3 days rest. So I'm a little worried, I'll be honest. I think the Yankees look tough. Like, watching them in person, I think they're tough. I think they've got the bats. They got obviously great depth, and it's going to be a test, man. We're going to have to, I think, get a little bit lucky in order to win the series.
You just said we like 20 times, an hour like 5 times. You're wearing the Rockets headband at times when you're playing. You really, really, even in Canada, are always repping for things Houston and things Texas. Why is that so close to your heart and so visible in everything that you do?
Now I said just loving where I came from and just always trying to keep things real. You know, I mean, I grew up only Astros, Rockets, and then when the Texans came, a Texans fan. And, you know, I just believe in staying true to where you are. That's why, like, when I run into people out here and they're like, you know, out here in Calgary and they're like, hey, you know, it's awesome to meet you. I'm a huge fan, but, you know, unfortunately, I have to tell you, I'm a Saskatchewan fan. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, why is that? They're like, well, I'm actually from there. I'm like, oh, I have zero problems with that. I don't care. I never care. I'd rather you be a fan of the team where you're from than just, oh, I moved to this city, now I'm a fan of you. I moved to this city, now I'm a fan of them. Yeah, I just think it's good to stay true to your home and who you are. And, cause, you know, all of a sudden in the locker room, we all like to talk trash because, you know, all of a sudden when the Blue Jays were playing good, there was a lot of brand new Blue Jay jerseys that came out. And this year, there was a lot of brand new Raptor stuff that came out. You know, so I like guys to be repping the team. Like Juwan Breskin, he reps his Raptor stuff even when they're not playing good. So that's something I respect. And, you know, I'm lucky right now because, you know, the Astros and Rockets are both very, very good teams and the Texans are trying to get there. Yeah, I think you got to rep your guys no matter what win or lose.
The Texans are trying to get there and a lot of people, you know, this offseason thought that you would be there as in the NFL. You know, you talked, you know, extensively on your show about wanting to compete, to play in the league and actually not just hold a clipboard and play. As a competitor, when there were situations like with the Vikings where not everyone was looking for competition on the depth chart, as a competitor, how did you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't take that very well. And maybe that's the wrong thing, but You know, I even asked my agent a couple of times coming out of some of the meetings, you know, because they usually call your agent like right away after and say, hey, like, you know, this is what we think about him. This is where we see him. We'll let you know as far as, you know, contract stuff like that. I got a lot of positive phone calls and I got a couple of negative just as far as, man, we love his talent on the field. We love watching his film, talking to him about football. You know, but it kind of seems like he might be a troublemaker when it comes to the locker room. And that's just because, yeah, a couple of teams asked me the same question and got the exact same answers. That I wasn't leaving Canada to CFL to come somewhere to say that I played in the NFL. You know, I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to go compete for a spot. And that's the thing. I think you have to understand if you want that position, you have to kind of conform to the way they do things. And you can see in the media right now, there's a lot of players having to learn that and understand that. And I thought I had something great up here and a chance to leave a legacy in the CFL. And the only way I was going to leave that was for a real, true opportunity. And to me, if you're not telling me that you want me to come compete for a job or come, you know, push a guy, then you don't truly believe in my talents or think that I have a chance of making it for you. So then, yeah, you know, I just didn't respond to it very well. Didn't really understand that thought process. And that's, you know, ultimately what led the decision to be staying.
So it sounds like your love for the CFL and your comfortableness in the country and in the league kind of made it towards a situation where if you were going to leave towards the NFL, it really had to be something that blew you away and was worth your while?
Yeah, I mean, it had to be something that a team was willing to take a chance on you the same way that I would be taking a chance on the NFL. You know, a lot of the questions I got were, hey, you know, you're a guy up there, you've done so many great things up there, and word is spreading that you can make this much money up there, which would equate to more than you would make here this year, so why would you leave? And I told them all the exact same thing. And if you grow up in Texas or, you know, anywhere in the United States where there's major football, you dream of playing in the NFL. It's what you've always done. I've got three brothers and, you know, we always competed playing Madden and playing, you know, backyard football and whatnot. And you all have that dream. And I wasn't going to let my brothers down and, you know, tell them I'm throwing that dream away just for complacency, just to stay here for no reason because I was scared to take a shot or I didn't want to throw away money, that kind of thing. You know, to me, it was I needed to see there was somebody that believed in me and wanted me to come be who I was and not change to be who they wanted me to be. You know, and that was a big part of it. And I think that's, you know, the attitude anybody should take into any job, really.
And you mentioned competition. Well, in your situation in Calgary, it's something somewhat new. There's real competition in the West all the way through the end of the regular season. It's almost like the playoffs have started early. How close it is at the top between, obviously, yourselves, Saskatchewan, and Winnipeg makes all of these games count, where you guys are normally at this point playing for records and people are debating how quickly you should be resting your starters for the eventual West Final. Can you remember a race that is this tight between, you know, some pretty balanced football teams?
No, I can't. I mean, not in the 7 years that I've been here, 8 years, I think. I can't remember being this, and I mean, honestly, too, we can't forget about Edmonton in the sense that if Trevor was still there, you know, you're talking about a 14 race where it's probably going to come down to the last game deciding who's first, second, third, and fourth. You know, even right now, we're still talking about the fact that, you know, I think everybody was pretty happy about winning that game last week. And even like the celebration, I think a lot of guys, and you saw the disappointment in Sask, like you almost think that they had already lost the West Division and we already won it. But really, I mean, you know, we could lose this week and be in second and lose the next week, be in third and going into playoffs without a home playoff game. So, yeah, I haven't seen a race this tight in a while, especially with just, I'd say, how equally talented the teams are. You know, it's just, there's a lot of different vibes every single game. Like some weeks you think you haven't figured out, this is team one, two, three. And then, you know, somebody else comes out and beats this team, and you're like, oh, man, maybe now they're the contender. So, yeah, I think it'll go all the way down to that very last game. And I don't think you'll be able to just go out and pick 100% who's going to win the West Semi or the West Finals. I think it's going to be a battle.
Yeah, this year has been a year of who has been able to stay healthy or get healthy at the right time and who's been able to find some contributions from some places that people maybe not thought they would come out of training camp. You guys certainly have been able to do that, which brings me to the young receiver that you guys have really groomed in Miami. His nickname, ASAP Hurd. How did that come about?
Oh, ASAP Hurd. I honestly have no idea. I was sitting on the field after the game, and Eric walked up during Hurd's during his interview and was like, just so y'all know, his nickname is ASAP Hurd. Honestly, I think it must be something between the receivers. I had never even heard him say that before. I think it was kind of something within the receivers. You probably haven't talked to Eric Rogers about that one. But, he's been grooming himself, honestly. I think a big thing is what we just talked about is confidence. You know, at the beginning of the year, he'd come out of the huddle and be a little bit questioning himself or trying to get help from another guy on, hey, what do I have? Like, and what's my adjustment? What's my motion? And just not having that confidence that you know exactly what you're doing. And I think that really changed when he became the starter as he, and he knew every single day that he was going to get all the reps at that position. And you can see that he stopped asking questions. He understood his role. He knew his game plan. And you could tell the difference from that all the way to his routes right away. Like, his routes looked like he knew exactly what he was doing and wanted to do. That's a big testament to him, honestly. He had a big work ethic, and, you know, he made a lot of mistakes early on, but he learned from those mistakes. And, you know, that tends to be who, takes that big leap.
Well, you as a quarterback, you know, in between series, have two, three, probably on your team, four guys in your ears saying, listen, man, I'm open. I got this. This is here. If you see a receiver breaking the huddle and isn't really sure what he's got, is asking questions, is that someone that you're thinking, okay, well, I can eliminate him from my progression? I don't necessarily have the same confidence I would in those other guys?
Yeah, honestly, I would say that's the number one confidence killer in a quarterback is when I look a guy in the eye and try to explain to him, like, hey, you know, you've got a curl route. Hey, push the 12 to 14, but make sure you really give him a post move for three steps and then come back to the football. But understand if it's cloud, make sure you go outside the corner instead of inside, because then you'll be able to lose that corner and get better space between him and the Sam. And you kind of see a guy look at you like a deer in the headlights, and you're like, oh, okay, you have no idea what I just said. It messes you up, because not only does it take you off his read, but the guy that's running the flat route, maybe the corner route with him, you know, you don't have confidence in the curl route anymore. So you might just completely say, okay, let me forget that side of the field and come back to this side. And you have bad, and then you snap the ball and you got bad numbers on that side, and it puts you into a bad play, you know, and you start to lose trust to that guy, because now he's messing up your job and your reads. So, I'd say early on, I think you can ask a lot of guys, you know, if I don't think you know what you're doing, there's a good chance that, you know, I'm trying to lobby for you to get off the field and put somebody in that knows what they're doing, because it's not talent that I want on the field. I want guys that are intelligent and understand their job, because that's really what makes a team click. And, I think every single guy learns that early on when they get here, and they take it to heart. And you know, I've gotten myself in trouble with it as well. Like, when somebody does that and then you lose faith for the rest of the game, but then you go back and look on film, like, oh, okay, they started to figure it out, and I still was ignoring them. You know, I've got to do a better job next game about making sure that I can come back to him, trust him to do his job, and just focus on my job. I think that's what seasons and games are, is learn to trust each other and have faith the other guy can get his job done.
That is the type of analysis you can get from the Bo Show every week from Bo Levi Mitchell, who I'm going to call a Sportsnet brethren, whether he likes it or not. It's 960 The Fan. You can call in at 403-240-4444. It's Wednesdays from 3 to 4. It's football. It's healthy snacks. It's country songs. It's fantasy football. And as you heard, it is baseball playoffs and talking about relievers. Bo literally knows it all and does it all. Thank you for doing this podcast, my man.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you. Thanks for having the time to take me on.